thank you for joining us today. I know there are a lot of people coming by to speak to the guest of honor, but I'm going to keep moving. My name is Jackie Robinson Ivy, and I have the distinct pleasure of serving as chair of this distinguished club, and we do not take for granted not one person here, so thank you for being here. And I would like to acknowledge our CEO, Dan Gibbons, and our board member, Rufus Williams. I don't know that Rufus is here, but he's here. Our staff is scattered all about the room. They do the hard work. Can I just take 1 second and ask everyone to thank the Maggiano staff and the City Club staff for the work that they do? It's amazing. Now, I'm going to ask you all to bear with me. I will try not to use my voiceover voice, but we have a list of sponsors that is quite long. I'm going to do this very quickly, and I'm going to ask everyone to applaud when I finish. Thank you so much, sponsors, in advance. Here we go. Everybody listening? I don't know why the Northern Trust table is talking, but they are like just talking. I mean, okay, I'm going to do this very quickly. White & Company, United Airlines, George's and Snowicki. I knew I was going to butcher that name. Alvarez & Associates, Northern Trust, Deloitte, Lodge Management Group, Chicago Federation of Labor, Stiefel, Loyola University, Rambler Brotherhood Project, Trinol, JLD Consulting, CS Insurance, National Association of Promotional Retailers, Jacobs Engineering Group, BMO Bank, EXP, Guidehouse, RM Chin & Associates, Illinois Network of Charter Schools, Haymarket Center, EXP, Illuminera Public Affairs, Cozen & O'Connor Strategies. I can't imagine why you all are here today, but we thank you. I want to take a moment to acknowledge and share some significant news about someone who has been a driving force behind the City Club for well over a decade. Amanda Agosti has decided to step away from the City Club in the coming weeks. Don't do that, because I'm going to need an usher. That's cultural for those of you all who don't understand that. Over the years, she has been the cornerstone of this organization, serving in key roles, including executive director and chief program officer. Amanda's leadership during the COVID-19 pandemic was pivotal, ensuring that City Club not only survived, but that we thrived. Quite simply, the organization would not be where it is today without her dedication and resilience. I'm going to say that again. The organization would not be where it is today without her dedication and resilience. Under Amanda's stewardship, the City Club expanded its programming and focused on engaging the next generation of civic leaders. Her unwavering commitment has helped transform the City Club into a vital platform for civic dialogue. While it is hard to imagine City Club without Amanda, can you imagine not being able to call her and say, is there a table left? Are there two seats? On behalf of CEO Dan Gibbons and the rest of the Board of Governors, we fully support her decision to explore new opportunities, and we wish her well. We know Amanda will continue to make an impact as a civic leader in Chicago, and we look forward to seeing where her next adventures take her. City Club will be hosting a holiday reception, I didn't know this, in Amanda's honor, and we look forward to celebrating her contributions and future on December 16th. More details to come. She does love champagne. I'm just going to drop that there for you. So Eleanor... Eleanor Roosevelt said, the future belongs to those who believe in their dreams. Rosa Parks said, you must never be fearful about doing the right thing. Ava DuVernay said, ignore the glass ceiling and just do the work. Dr. Maya Angelou said, every time a woman stands up for herself, she stands up for all women. Malala said, there are two powers, the pen and the sword, but there's a third one, and it's more powerful than all of them, and that's a woman. Oprah said, think like a queen. Queens do not fear failure. We just use them as stepping stones. And Madeleine Albright said, it took me quite a while to develop this voice. Now that I have it, you can't possibly think I'm going to quiet it. I would like everyone, if you're able, to stand to your feet and applaud and thank Amanda Agosti. She hates that part, by the way. Whoever gets her next, and I would be crazy to think it might not be somebody in this room, you got a gem. Having said that, I am going to bypass all of the civic, religious, political leaders in the room. I'm sure that our guest of honor is going to say something. There are so many of you all in the room. Just take a wave if you're... That means everybody should be waving, actually. Oh, see, no one wants to wave. Okay. I'm going to step down from this place. We are going to enjoy our lunch, and Dan will be back in just a bit with our guest of honor. Everyone, enjoy your lunch. Thank you.
I'm Dan Gibbons from the City Club of Chicago. Thank you all for being here. Thank you, Jackie, for that those remarks earlier. And, of course, Amanda, for all of your efforts today and every day for so many years. This was an important event. As Amanda wanted to close, I think this is the third mayor that she's hosted here at City Club. So we're very excited for Amanda and for her future. Before we hear from our speaker, I'm just going to mention one more housekeeping remark, that if you have questions, I'm going to be asking Mayor Johnson a few questions that I have. But please, if you have questions, write them out on these blue papers that are on your table and just get them up to the stage. I'll see them and I'll grab them from you. And we'll fit as many of them into the conversation as possible. I already have a couple, so please keep those coming. And without further ado, I think we all know why we're here today. And it's an honor for me. As I said, I'll be sitting and asking a few questions later. It's an honor for me to be doing that here at City Club, where we are proud to be hosting all of you civic leaders who care so much about this great city. And this man certainly does as well and is dedicating his life to our city, to the future of our city, and his own children and all of our children, the future of Chicago. The 57th mayor of the city of Chicago, please join me in welcoming to City Club Mayor Brandon Johnson.
Thank you very much. Thank you so much. Please be seated. Thank you. Thank you, Dan, for that introduction. And it has been a while since I've had the opportunity to be before the City Club today. And it is truly my honor. I believe the last time that I was here, I was serving as a Cook County Commissioner in the 1st District. And so I do take this moment and embrace it. Serving as the Cook County Commissioner of the 1st District, and now the privilege and honor of serving as the mayor of the greatest freaking city in the world, the city of Chicago. You know, these past 18 months have certainly been filled with a great deal of joy and challenge and surprise. But serving in this capacity as the 57th mayor of the city of Chicago has truly been one of the honors of my life. Of course, the greatest honor is being able to fall in love with your best friend, my wife, the first lady of this amazing city, and to our wonderful, thank you. There's a great deal of admiration that I have for her and her character and her strength, and of course, our children, our lovely three children, Owen and Ethan and Braden, truly the joy of my life. And then the other joy was when the Cubs won the World Series in 2016. So all of my dreams have already come true. You know, but I'm still very much energized and hopeful in this moment, though I know some of you can tell that my goatee might be a little grayer these days or shinier or more silver. But that tells you that being the mayor of the city of Chicago, it bestows wisdom from on high. You know, I'd be first to admit, you know, when I thought about my childhood and what I thought I would become, I did not know the full capacity of which podium that I would be able to stand behind.
And so running the third largest city in the world is certainly the dream of our ancestors. And that being in this moment with all of these challenges, I can tell you something very emphatically, that this moment does not intimidate me. This is not a moment where I'm afraid. In fact, I'm even more energized to disrupt the status quo in this city, to transform it on behalf of the people of this city. You know, it's true, though, when I was, thinking about my trajectory, it wasn't politics. In fact, I always wanted to be a public school teacher. That was the only job that I've ever dreamed of, and it is still the best job that I've ever had. And I just want to say something for the record. Public school teachers are not the enemy of democracy.
That's right.
And then I'll dare to say something else. Unions are not the enemy of democracy. You know, when I began my political career, I walked into an office of a state senator that was just gotten elected, and his name was Don Harmon. And when I met him, he said, yes, my political career, my trajectory started off working on the west side of Chicago and in Oak Park, wanting to see a real difference take place in our community. And I'm grateful that he gave me a chance. Now, I worked for him. I got paid a little funky $10 an hour working for the state of Illinois as his director of constituent services. It was the first time I realized that a business card with a long title means you just might be broke a little bit longer. And I walked in as his director. I walked out as his director of constituent services. He is now the Senate president, and he calls me Mr. Mayor. Thank you, Don Harmon, for believing in me. But with all of that being said, there are many hopes and dreams that still have not been realized. What it simply means, though, is that we have much work to do still. And I know we all get caught up sometimes in the day-to-day headlines. I don't read them. But I know sometimes we get caught up in the political back and forth. But I want to zoom out a little bit today, because I think it's important that we understand how these first 18 months in office have already begun to set a new course for our beloved city. When I took office, I talked about revitalizing the soul of Chicago, bringing people together, sharing ideas, and finding solutions without compromising our values. I called for our city to reject the outdated zero-sum view of politics, and instead, let's work collectively and collaboratively to invest in the people who make this city beautiful, who make this city vibrant. But I wasn't oblivious to the steep challenges that we are currently facing. But we have answered the call. First and foremost, I want to say this and say it in a very emphatic way with a great deal of sincerity. This is not just about political spin or responding to opinion polling. I'm going to share with you real facts about where we were and where we are today. And I do understand that there's a great deal of fear and trepidation that people do have and possess. That's why I think it's important as leaders we get to say with true conviction to be not afraid. And we don't have to be afraid because all of us in here have a collective agreement and talent to make sure that the neighborhoods that have been historically disinvested in, that they become prioritized, especially communities that have been left behind for a very long time, communities that have been ridden with crime and disinvestment. And that's why we put forth the People's Plan for Community Safety, to invest in people and communities that have historically been left behind. And starting in August, we prioritized Inglewood, Little Village, West Garfield Park, and of course the Austin community. Thank you. And with those neighborhoods being the first set of our prioritization, we'd made sure that we created an office of reentry, working with the Black Caucus of the City Council to ensure that residents who are returning from jail and incarceration, that the cycle of incarceration, we can disrupt that by actually seeing them for who they really are and what their potential is. We also made sure that we added 400 more civilian positions in the police department to ensure that we can actually connect to people and then free up officers to respond to areas where there is greater need. We added 200 more detectives. I made a promise that we would do that at the end of my first term. We would have accomplished that by the end of this year. And working collectively to ensure that we are making critical investments in our communities, whether it's making sure that there's an office of reentry, making sure that we actually have detectives that can solve crime, making sure that we're making critical investments across the board. We have begun to see the tide turn. Homicides are down. Shootings are down. Vehicular carjackings are down. Criminal sexual assaults are down. Robberies are down. In the first 18 months in office, we have moved our city towards a better, stronger, safer space by investing in people. Now, look, I understand that there are individuals that are somewhat trepidatious about our clarity of consciousness in this moment because they have become accustomed to the old forms of doing business and politics in Chicago. I did not come here to do what other administrations have done. I've come here to do the exact opposite of what other administrations have done. And I understand that deeply in my heart that as much as we can recognize the transformation that we have begun, that there's still much more work to do. Too many people are still suffering from violence. Too many people are still suffering from the loss of real economic vibrancy. Research tells us, though, that keeping communities safe is making sure that there are real economic opportunities for everyone to enjoy in our respective neighborhoods. Giving people an access to jobs, and not just any job, but a job that has a well-paid salary with benefits, provides stability to keep people safe and strong, and especially our young Black men. Now, I'm going to say something about our young Black men that many people are not accustomed to hearing. I love them. I do. Now, this doesn't mean that we simply condone certain behavior that is antithetical to who we are as a race and as a people. But one thing for sure, we will not mischaracterize and demonize all Black men to the extent in which we then get to judge all Black men through a lens of white supremacy. I reject that. And that's why I'm very proud that when we think about our community colleges, the number one subgroup of registrants in our community colleges are young Black men. Don't tell me what I already know about young Black men. They want to be loved, appreciated, and invested in, and that's what I'm going to continue to do. Because they are such an important part of our workforce, I want to make this very clear. Our workforce is what makes our city strong. This is not just a union town. This is a town that has been built off of the ingenuity and the innovation of working people. Whether it's Carnegie Steel or Henry Ford or Tesla, electricity, the steels, the steel industry, or even the car industry, it's working people that have brought this city together, and it has made it the vibrant, amazing city that it is. And that's why I was proud when workers in this city asked for a day off, I gave them 10. That's just a reasonable way to negotiate. 1.4 million people now have the ability to not only get to have a decent paying job, but they don't have to make a decision between supporting their families and taking care of them or just simply taking a day off. We have the most expansive parental leave for CPS employees, a profession that is made up of primarily women. The fact that people would fight against women having days off is unconscionable to me. I am proud that as a former public school teacher and as a Black man that we gave women days off that they deserve. 100,000 tip workers have raises now. Do you all know that tip workers have their history in the vestiges of slavery? Why would we continue on the journey of those that enslaved people? But aren't you glad that we have true liberation in the city of Chicago? Because over 100,000 workers, mainly brown and black women, will continue to get raises on top of their tips. Because this is a city that values workers. We are revitalizing the vacant storefronts, investing in small businesses, whether it's in Chatham, Chinatown, downtown, Humble Park, Rogers Park, South Shore, in order to build the commercial corridors to support our entrepreneurs and our vibrant communities. We are cutting the red tape to streamline commercial and housing development, because not only is rent too high, it has gotten too hard to do business with Chicago. Chicago is finally open for business, and thank God that you have a righteous man in office, because Chicago is not for sale. Too long, the process to do business in the city of Chicago has been arduous and cumbersome, distracting people from actually being able to invest in this city. And let's talk about housing. Every single human need is a human right. And that's why I'm proud that within the first 18 months of office, we have built 3,400 new affordable homes, with many more to come. You know, the affordability crisis that has taken decades to emerge. We've dealt with this pressing problem by ensuring that vacant lots can be turned over to the community, so that developers that reflect the community can build homes in their own community and make them affordable. We made sure that lots in the 20th Ward, in the 24th Ward, in the 9th Ward are turned over to people who will actually do right by the people who make up those communities. And that's what business has to be. That's what politics has to be in this city. So today, I'm grateful, though, that we respond to crisis. You know, the new arrivals mission was one that intimidated people. Can I just say something for the record? And I'm about to close here. You hear me, Pastor Chris Harris? All right. He know there's two more coming here. Do you all know that there were asylum seekers who were on the floors in police districts before I became mayor, right? Yeah, I know that. And do you know that there wasn't a real concerted effort or a plan to figure out how we respond to that crisis? There have been over 50,000 new arrivals from Central and South America that have come through the city of Chicago, of which at the height of this crisis, 15,000 of them were in shelters that we had to build on the spot with no help from the federal government. Do you all know there's been 30,000 asylum seekers from the Ukraine who are right here in Chicago, too? You've never heard a word about it. And this morning, there are 1,800 new arrivals who are in shelter from 15,000 with no help from the federal government. And then what we did was we took this crisis, managed it, and then guess what we did? We did what Chicagoans do. We built a single shelter one system with the state of Illinois and the city of Chicago coming together to build a system to respond to homelessness. We did not allow a crisis to break us. We took the crisis and we allowed it to build us. And finally, my brother. You know, I'm very proud of the business ventures that are running us over in the city of Chicago. $20 billion of new investment in 18 months. Psi Quantum, which was landed in the city of Chicago, not by happenstance. They could have chosen anywhere else to go. But thank God for the good leadership of my chief operations officer, John Robertson, and his team that made sure that we demonstrated to this major contribution to a side of the city that has been ignored for over 30 years. The first time in 30 plus years where the Southeast Side has received an investment this large. And not just Psi Quantum building the first quantum computer in the United States of America, only the second on the globe, 1901 project on the west side of Chicago, $7 billion, a $1.25 billion investment in housing and economic development, the largest investment for housing and economic development in the history of Chicago, and it's only been 18 months. And here's the part that I'm also very excited about. is that fact that we know that investing in our young people is front and center.
Yes, yes.
Let me just say this. I'm going to speak from my heart. Is that okay?
That's okay.
You know, there was a passage in a moment in our scriptures where the young people were surrounding themselves around Jesus the Christ. And then people begin to shoo them away. And then Jesus the Christ said that if you reject and cause a young person to stumble, you deserve death by execution. He said, tie a millstone around your neck and go jump in the lake. I will never turn my back on young people, no matter what any of you all say about them. And that's why I'm proud of the fact that in 2 years, less than 2 years, we have hired up to 28,000 young people for summer jobs, a 32% increase, of which the top 10 neighborhoods in which they come from were South Side and the West Side. And of course, the number one community where the most young people were hired from were right in Austin. Now, if the OIG wants to do an investigation on that, it's just coincidental that I happen to live there. And I don't apologize for it. And so, and young people and business and economic development and housing, mental and behavioral health, you all. We have to see people in their most vulnerable state.
Yes, sir.
And be willing to invest in them. Yes. And that's why I'm proud that I'm the first administration since Mayor Harry Washington not to reject behavioral and mental health public services. We're going to reopen the mental health clinic in Roseland. We've already cut the tape in UIC Clinic on the Lower West Side, providing behavioral mental health services in Garfield Park because it is personal.
Yes.
It is personal. People are in pain and they are hurting. And so with all of these challenges, you all, there are some dark clouds that are gathering in our nation's capital. But we won't be intimidated. We won't cower under pressure. I'm reminded of these words. You know, Mayor Harry Washington had to deal with a similar dynamic when Ronald Reagan was elected. And one of the things that I'm actually very clear about, the abominable ignorance that is coming from the president-elect and former president is quite damning. And we will not allow tiny gods who attempt to have flexibility in the morality to use it as a way to divide us. Because this is Chicago. We don't break. And everything that has been done to destroy us, I'm confident that these are the opportunities that this generation has been waiting for. Where others see these challenges and they cower under pressure or they become intimidated by the moment, this is an opportunity for us to course and to set a new course for the people of Chicago, that no matter who you are, where you live, who you love, you deserve to be protected, you deserve to be safe, you deserve to be loved, and you deserve to be invested in. Thank you all. God bless the greatest city in the world, the city of Chicago.
Give you a little view. We got a tight room here today, Mayor.
Yeah. Where's my microphone? I'm already mic'd up here, aren't I? Okay, so let's get the tough question out of the way, okay?
Thanks for that.
All right. So, look, I called the McCaskies, and I just told them, look, Eberflus is not the future. So, yes, I did intervene on behalf of the people of Chicago. We needed leadership change. There, I did it. It's over. You can report it. And you are welcome.
So you're going to coach the Bears?
Well, let me just say it like this. I have been sending in a series of plays that I fully expect the new offensive coordinator to implement.
And are we going to build that stadium? We didn't really plan to go here.
So now you want to have two hard questions in a row. Let me just say this about the stadium. Look, I know that there's a lot of sort of speculation around this moment, but the $600 million debt that's owed on the old stadium is a depreciating asset, right? And so what I'm committed to, of course, is making sure that, you know, the Bears stay in Chicago. I'm still committed to that. You know, but to eliminate the debt that is owed on the current stadium, to get the McCaskies to put in over $2 billion, and then the ISFA, which is revenue that is only used for stadiums. By the way, that was the last legislative dynamic that Mayor Harold Washington was able to put together. ISFA was created under Mayor Harold Washington to build stadiums. And so not only would we have the billionaires pay for the stadium, they would also accumulate and deal with the debt that is owed on the current stadium. And then by design, ISFA, which essentially is the hotel tax, of which visitors keep coming to Chicago, billionaires and visitors would pay for a stadium as well as eliminate the debt from the old stadium that the city of Chicago would own. I am not saying that I am Jesus the Christ. I'm just saying that we have solved for a couple of things. You actually create more green space, one, and 43,000 jobs that would come from the infrastructure development that we need. 23,000 jobs right here in the city of Chicago. If someone has a better plan than eliminating the debt, building a stadium with visitors and billionaires that the city of Chicago would own while creating more space and creating jobs for the young black men who are signing up at community colleges. If you have a better plan than that, see my senior advisor, Jason Lee.
All right. So you, and Jason's here, by the way. We want to raise your hand. Just stand right up. So you clearly have, you're talking about depreciation and debt, and you got numbers on your mind, huh?
Yeah.
You got a budget?
Are you trying to trigger me here?
You got a budget on your mind. I was going to say, hey, happy holidays. You know, this is, you get to take a month off, right? December, it's a pretty easy time for the fifth floor, right?
Yeah, it's just like coasting right now. It's like, no, but in all seriousness, look, the financial challenges that we inherited are severe. Do you all mind if I speak candidly? You won't hold that against me, will you?
It's a city club.
It's okay. All right. So two administrations ago, there was the property tax increase over $500 million for three consecutive years. The pension deficit grew by $7 billion. And then our credit rating was junk status. That was the so-called pro-business mayor. Where pension debt grew, property taxes increased, and the thing that he was supposed to solve, he didn't. It actually got worse. Now let's fast forward to the person who was arrested for blocking elevators because that same administration refused to support black schools, right? The deficit that we are experiencing right now has more to do with negligence, malfeasance, and a lack of regard for working people in this city. I'm just happened to be bold enough to call it out and say it out loud and say that we can't kick the can down the road. Now, there are individuals who are on city council right now that voted for higher property taxes. 3 years in a row, did not take care of pensioners, did not invest in our public schools, credit rating ran in the ground, we had no labor peace. And so now I'm simply in a position where my daughter, who is 10 years old, so she's going to vote for me when she's 18. So that's the 31 election. I don't want her to go to that polling booth and say, Dad, I'm going to vote for you, but how come you didn't fix something when you had a chance to fix it 8 years ago? And so what we've done is we've closed that gap by $700 million with revenue and some cuts and efficiencies. And our budget director is here. Annette Guzman has done an amazing job. And what we know that we need is real, sustainable, progressive revenue. And this is not just the state of Illinois' challenge, right? I believe there are some state elected officials here. Can you all give it up for state elected officials? Because they got a real rough job.
And you may need a couple things from them, too.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Man, that's a tough job.
We should probably acknowledge any aldermen that are in the room.
Yeah, I'll get to them in a second. I want to know why come they're not at work. I thought they were having budget meetings today. Come to hear me, dog. You can just go stream. Just pay attention. No, I'm sorry. It's all right. But
no, we need in person. We got to be in the
room for
these conversations.
Of course. Look, the state of Illinois knows that they're projecting conservatively a $3 billion deficit. Yeah. The state of Maryland, $2.7 billion. Right? This is a problem all over the country. And so my team, my budget team, has been working hand in glove with the governor's team around coming up with progressive revenue ideas that can actually make critical investments across the state. What we have done in Chicago, we have created a process for the first time where we've opened it up. And every alder could tell you this, especially if they serve. There has never been a more transparent, open process during this budget cycle ever in the history of Chicago. I know that because they have told me that. Do you know there are some alders who have never invited to the fifth floor by previous administrations? Never. And so it's coming up with progressive revenue to make sure, here's the bottom line, we cannot afford to continue to cut services. Just can't. And when I go all over the city of Chicago, no one runs me down and says, Mayor, could you please cut the DFSS budget? Because we just think that you're just spending too much money in trying to solve homelessness. No one says, Mayor, could you just cut the services in Streets and Sands? Because, my goodness, all the trees that have already been trimmed, we just don't need it anymore. No one is asking me to lay people off. Even if they did, I would respectfully reject it. And so this budget process is about opening up a dialogue that the people of Chicago have been deserving of for generations now. And look, I'm going to do my job. My job is to present a balanced budget. It is the city council's job to pass one. Now, I'm working with them collectively. There are some smart people. And so with that, thank you to all the alders who are in the building today, especially the smart ones. Thank you for being here. You all can determine who you all think are the smart ones. But they are. They're very gracious, and I'm grateful that they have embraced the collaborative-in-chief narrative and nature that I bring to the political space.
And a budget really is, it's more than line items and accounting. It's a roadmap, right? I mean, it's a roadmap for what you want to happen and what your how your policy is going to be carried out. Yeah. So what are we going to see that shows your priorities that
yeah,
we maybe
thank you.
Haven't
That's
seen?
A great question, Dan. So look, we're going to expand youth employment. We are. My goal is to see opportunities grow for young people to find their purpose. So that's in the budget. Making sure that we are building more affordable homes. I know it probably doesn't feel like this when you're driving around Chicago, but do you all know we can conservatively fit 400,000 more people in Chicago? I know folks just got real nervous. I bet you that congestion tax sounds real good right now.
A preview into it.
But we really can get up to 700,000. The challenge that we have is that we have to build more affordable homes faster. Like as I said, 3,400 within the first 18 months, we're going to continue to do that. You're also going to see in this budget my commitment to behavioral mental health. Look, many of you have probably already heard my story about my personal journey and what it was like to grow up with a big brother who had mental illness, but we didn't have a name for it. And I've always shared this story. You know, my daughter, who is 10 now, I've shared this story before, but it's apropos for this moment. You know, we're having a back and forth towards the end of the pandemic. We were just, you know, getting a little bit frustrated of spending so much time together. And in the middle of that conversation, we're going back and forth. And then she interrupted me, Dan, and she said, Dad, you are triggering me. I know. Yeah, that was, look, there are times where I have to fight to make sure I don't lose my black card. That was a tough one for me, Dan.
This sounds like some of your interaction with the press sometimes.
Well, I tell you this, they certainly know I'm black in the press, but, you know, the fact that a black dad is going back and forth with his little daughter is problematic, right? But what I was especially appreciative was of that she was bold enough and felt comfortable to tell me that she didn't feel right. Her uncle, who she never met, didn't feel comfortable, and he died addicted and unhoused. And so all of these administrations that have been so animus towards behavior and mental health, where you literally had black families, in particular brown families, blocking themselves and chaining themselves to mental health clinics, And you actually had an administration that ignored them. I'm not going to do that. And what you're also going to see in this budget is a commitment to community safety. You know, whether it's the 3 brand new helicopters, I believe 2 more will land in Chicago in a couple of weeks, making sure that the 200 detectives that I promised that we would have to solve crime in Chicago, that's still in this budget. And really just making sure that we're growing our economy. You know, small businesses in this city, it's the one area that I just want the city to appreciate more. It's the small businesses that continue to allow for neighborhoods to thrive. And so when I talk about the $1.25 billion investment, $625 million is set aside for small businesses. We're gonna grow and plant up to 525 new small businesses. The other thing, the last thing that you're gonna see in this budget, I'm gonna go back to housing, is a revolving loan, essentially, that will allow us to build more affordable homes, particularly affordable rental units, faster. And then those dollars are recycled within this particular program that allows us to continue to grow our affordable rental units. So all of that is in this budget. My vision for Chicago is pretty simple, is that we invest in the people of this city to ensure that everyone in this city has more than enough. And that we don't have to like settle for this zero-sum competition where people believe that they don't have because someone else is taking from them. That is a deficit mindset. And so growing our economy and responding to the debt, we can do that at the same time. And I'm grateful that at least some of the credit rate agencies are paying attention to us. 2 credit upgrades in the first 18 months in office. There's a little bit of some threat. And thank you. So first of all, Dan, I just want you to know that the 5 people that are consistently clapping for me, I just want you to know that I didn't put them up to it, right? Dan, you better get control of this back interview room. Fast.
So on the budget, it's been 18 months since you have been mayor, and you talk about previous administrations and, you know, and now you've learned a lot now that you've gotten into office.
Yeah.
How has what you've learned about this process, and not just the budget, but it's really governing, right? Prioritizing, and, you know, there are things that you said you couldn't do or wouldn't do that now you have to do. It's because you learned a lot more getting into it. What would you say you've learned from the inside that you maybe didn't expect?
That's a great question. Well, look, the first thing that I will say that I've learned, I always imagined that the mayor had the ability to do certain things. I did. And, you know, I became especially curious around TIF surplus. Because, you know, for years, mayors have said, well, we can't declare that kind of TIF surplus for whatever reason. And most of them didn't declare the full level of TIF surplus, particularly to go back into the taxing bodies. And so when I got to the 5th floor and I saw that it was actually possible to turn the taxpayer dollars back into the hands of taxpayers, I was overjoyed to learn that what we had fought for, we could actually realize. 2 consecutive budgets, the largest TIF surplus declaration for a CPS, for community colleges. Our TIF surplus goes to county government. I mean, there's multiple the parks. What else am I missing? The libraries. Do the libraries get TIF dollars too? They do, right? My budget director is always here to make sure I know what I'm talking about.
As is our commissioner, our library commissioner.
Yes, and Commissioner Brown is like, yes, it does. And thank you very much, Mr. Mayor. And so I learned that there are things that we can do. Now there are some limitations to the role, right? And what I've learned is that there are things that take longer because they were designed to take longer. And that's frustrating. So what did we do? We put the Cut the Tape initiative into effect, where things that have taken 9 months, which has been a distraction and discouragement for businesses, we've been able to reduce it to 6 months. There are things that I will be able to work with city council around how we can speed government up. I think the other thing that I've learned, which is actually quite humbling, is that, you know, there's no task too small. There's a young woman here who has stopped me three times at three different events to tell me the same thing. And it's a very small element where most people don't pay attention to, but it could have a tremendous impact on so many people. And it's sometimes it's the small things and the little things that get ignored that could metastasize. And that is problematic, and that's something that I am working through.
So there are lots of small things. There are lots of big things. You mentioned public safety, housing, education, mental health. I mean, we could talk all day just about any one of those issues. Let's go to public safety for a minute. We have a new state's attorney as of yesterday, as of a month or so ago, but sworn in yesterday. Actually, it's nice to see Superintendent Snelling there with her at her swearing in. Do you see more collaboration coming because of that, and how is that going to affect public safety in Chicago? And as we, you know, you've talked about stats are getting better, things are getting better, but we're still seeing a lot of crime. Everybody is. You're seeing, you get calls every day, I'm sure. So is it getting better? And can we point to anything recent that can help?
Yeah. So first of all, to your first part of your question, yes, collaboration is imminent and it's necessary. In fact, you know, one of the things that I just think is important to say in this audience, for the people of the city to know, that the level of cooperation that my administration has engaged in with the county and the state, we are incredibly proud of. Now, look, this is not to declare me to be a saint. You all can do that in 40, 50 years if you wish. But in the meantime, I don't think there's a secret that there has been mayors who have not always gotten along with governors, or mayors who have not always gotten along with county board presidents. And President Prequel and I, we meet, I think, every other week. You know, we talk and we listen to one another. We share ideas. We learn from one another. As I said, my team meets with the governor's team on a regular basis, right? And there was a table that was set for county, state, the city to collaborate and work together around the issue of community safety. And the city had refused up until me coming into office to actually participate in that collective table, because it is going to take all of us. Now, to the second part of your question, you know, the oxymoronic nature of proving that things are getting better, even though things still exist, that is quite the juxtaposition. And any loss of life is a hardship and is traumatic. And we've experienced a lot of that in this city. Now, things are trending in the right direction. I don't think it's a requirement that you always have to boast about the success that we're having. But I think the people of Chicago do deserve to know that we are safer than we were in previous years. I know what it feels like, because I'm the first mayor likely in the history of Chicago to wake up in one of the most disinvested and violent neighborhoods in Chicago. And so the trepidation and the anxiety that parents experience when they send their kids out, that's real. I know that. I know when I taught my oldest to ride his bike and how I would have to give him instructions on which way he could go in order to get to the park so he can practice soccer or hit off a tee. Like, these are life decisions that people make every single day. And as a city, we should be offended and insulted that other people are defining who we are. Yes, we have work to do. But in 2025, we have the opportunity for the first time in over a decade to have less than 500 homicides. Now, this is what I'm saying, how awkward that is. Any loss of life, but we have an opportunity for less life to be lost if we actually put in the hard work, roll up our sleeves, and not allow the narrative that comes from the outside to determine who we are as a city. Like, for real, you all. We are Chicago. We are Chicago. We have come through some of the most treacherous times, and we have been trendsetters from our inception. The greatest love story of them all, a Haitian black immigrant who falls in love with a Potawatomi woman and established a trade post at the banks of the river because she understood that we would be the global capital of the world, where 20% of the world's fresh water is right in our front yard, where innovation continues to take place, the best universities, the best workforce, the number one relocator for businesses, voted the top city in the world, in the country, by Condé Nast. And $20 billion of new investment. We are building affordable homes downtown. Nowhere else in this country can you hear affordability and downtown. And so, yes, there's work to be done, and by us investing in people. Just so the last part of your question about where are some of the signs. Now, December has started off rough. In November, we had a 35% reduction in homicides in 2024 versus 2023. 17 less people were harmed and killed in this city. And November was one of the warmest months on record. So you can't just say it was the weather. I'm saying that I don't think it's a coincidence that we're seeing declines in the 15th and 25th police districts. Both of them touch Austin, which is the same neighborhood that hired the most young people. Do you all see the connection here? This is not just about policing. This is about investing in people, investing in who they are, helping them find their purpose. We're not going to get out of this mess by pointing the fingers at one another. We're going to get out of this mess by putting our arms around one another, making sure we're investing in our children. I'll be doggone if I allow anybody in this room or anybody in this city make me flinch when it comes to investing in public education. Ain't nobody in this city, no one in this position has ever had more standing in public education than this mayor. I've taught in our schools. I'll send my children to these schools, and I'll be doggone if someone tries to reduce my power after the people of Chicago voted me to transform this city. Guess what? We are going to transform this city, whether you are with this formation or not. And if you're not with it, you might as well join the in crowd now, because people's lives are depending on us getting it right.
So let's stick with education. You've got a school board
and
now.
And Dan, could you just relax a little bit? Jeez.
Keep it going. Come on.
Oh my gosh.
We'll keep you rolling, I think, with this one. You've got your school board. It's all set. Now we know who won the elections, and you have the school board that you have appointed. What are we going to see on schools with CPS? There's so much. I know it's a fully loaded question because there are negotiations happening. There is this new school board finding its ground beneath it, and there are budget issues that we all know about. What are we going to see now that we have the school board in place? What's going to happen? Let's take us in a year from now, maybe. What's your vision, and how is that going to play out in the more immediate future?
Yeah, it's a great question. So first of all, congratulations to the people of Chicago for embracing democracy. It's a big deal. Like, the fact that we have an elected school board, I know there's trepidation around it. I still believe that this is the best form of governance, when people actually get to run for office and then the people of Chicago get to decide who gets to represent their interests.
Funny concept, right?
Right. You know what I'm saying? Particularly at a time in which, in our country, where democracy is being squashed, right? So here's my vision for education. First of all, we have to make a commitment to funding our neighborhood schools. We do. What was ironic, though, is that when I said that we're going to fund neighborhood schools, people started to believe that somehow that meant that we weren't going to support selective enrollment. It actually speaks to the trauma in Chicago. That doesn't speak to my values, where people just automatically believe because we're going to prioritize a particular group that has been neglected, and that means that somehow we're going to take from other people. Chicago has been deeply traumatized through our school system. And there's a lot of evidence of that. You know, I think it's actually pretty fascinating that it was a public school teacher at Marshall High School that led these wildcat strikes, as well as the city strikes around the defunding of our public education system. Al Raby, who invited Dr. King to Chicago, who was Mayor Harold Washington's campaign manager, who was also a social studies teacher. Just think, it's like Mark Twain says that history doesn't repeat itself, but it certainly has rhythm. It rhymes. And so I think it's actually quite fitting that a social studies teacher who is deeply connected to civil rights and labor rights and my faith now gets to serve in this capacity. So my vision is just simply carrying out the hopes and aspirations of my ancestors to ensure that every single child in this school district has everything that they need. You know, there's a couple of Westsiders in the room. I want to give a shout out to Mr. Townsend and Rufus Williams. So these are two incredible examples of what investment looks like. And these are brothers who did not leave the neighborhood. These are brothers who still support this city. We're working on a project now with Richard and looking to expand community colleges so that young people can find their purpose in the trades. And we're hoping to settle that soon. And so when I say every child finds their purpose, whether it's the trades or whether it's something, you know, beyond that, that they can pursue that. And that school doesn't have to be like this cumbersome, arduous experience where kids don't get to have fun. I mean, how serious it all y'all take chemistry in here? I'm just saying, it's probably like three of y'all and one of is a doctor. They had to.
Cheryl Thomas begs to differ.
You know, that's what I'm saying, all right? I'm just saying, like, don't act like you didn't go to school because you didn't. You were looking forward to the pep rally or band. It's. I just find it interesting that when it comes to poor people, we believe that their only pathway is through like rote and this, you know, arduous, like mundane tasks. Here's what my philosophy was as a teacher: if you don't help young people learn to ask questions, they will forever be in a position where they only answer questions. That's a power dynamic. Think about the professions that get to ask questions. Dan. You know what I'm saying? Don't mean to make you so uncomfortable up here. Maybe a little bit. But being able to have inquiry. Now, as far as the board is concerned, what I fully expect them to do is to carry out that vision. And I think there's an opportunity to have more sustainable community schools in our school district. Right now we have 20. We fought for that. Sustainable community schools allow for real community input and really control over what that local school community deserves and needs. We need more psychiatrists and psychologists in our schools. Hey, check this out. I don't know if you all are aware. Do you know when we are preparing for war, the U.S. military, they send doctors who will perform their duties during war. They send them to hospitals in black communities because that is the closest to what they're going to experience in war.
Got pretty quiet, y'all, in this room.
And it needs to. The trauma in black and brown communities is far more profound than a headline.
My God.
These systems have harmed people.
Yes, yes.
And then the people that they harm, they point the finger at them and say, well, you got to raise your kids better in this harm that I've created. Now, look, I know it's politically correct to cast the blame on poor people and working people. It's easy. And then you have this billionaire who was able to not only harm people, but get away with it and got elected again. And you mad at a young person in the city of Chicago who is hurt and angry? Do you know my students are now 30 years old plus? Those were the students where they woke up every single day and saw bulldozers staring them down every morning in anticipation to destroy their public housing. That's the trauma that people were raised in. And then they come to Mr. Johnson's class, and I'm talking about drawing conclusions and author's approach. Now, listen, I was great at it, by the way. Just want you to know that. And they had distractions. I'm saying a school district that sees the humanity in people. There's a good brother here, Leader Marcus Evans. You should hear his story of what he had to do to get from one part of the city to the other part of the city. with his little brother. You know how frustrating it is? I got a little brother right now who's texting me. I can feel my phone buzzing. And he did it, though. He did it. And I'm saying that, yes, we can produce more Marcus Evans. We can produce more Rufus Williams. But do we always have to come up on the rough side of the mountain? I'm just saying. There's certain trauma that I don't want my kids to ever experience. You know, they look at me in a certain way because they don't understand, you know, the full struggle that I had. They don't know what it's like to have an orange extension cord to keep our electricity on from the neighbor's house. And they won't ever know that. But there are too many families in this city who still have that experience. And they're going to point the finger at them. Not this mayor. We're going to put our arms around them. That's what our school district has to do. Put our arms around our children to make sure that the investments that we're making, like in North Lawndale, we put $40 million into Johnson and Chalmers, and then we put more money into the Collins Academy, right? So that that can be a feeder neighborhood high school and that they don't have to apply and hope that they get in somewhere. They can actually stay in their same neighborhood and go to the school. Collins Academy, by the way, which is where Grady Jordan taught, which he was the first public official as the principal to bring Mayor Harold Washington into a public space. A public school educator brought a black mayor. He said, it's going to be a black mayor. My kids have to know him. The Collins Academy is an historic institution in this city. And they are begging to make sure that there's resources there. That's why the school closings are so traumatic. Because let me just say this last part. Because the history of black education in this city, we should never forget the harm that was caused by these just awful racist school closings, of which we told people at the time that it would not make things better. You just said it yourself. We still have financial woes, and they said that was going to fix it. They lied to us. And they continue to lie to us. Not this mayor. Not this school district. No more.
So we are way over time. I just was informed. I'm sorry. I've been so engaged in this conversation. I have not looked at my watch. But I gotta, we got to close out somehow here. So and just I feel like I got a history lesson, all sorts of things. Thank you for that.
So you know when I come back next week, I'm going to quiz you on all of this.
Hey, as long as you're coming back, we want to have you back because we have a lot more to discuss. I want to get into mental health. We want to get into the U.S. Conference of Mayors and your national vision. And there's so many things that I think we need to talk about. I hope you'll come back. You don't have to say, are you going to come back? You don't have to say it now, but will you come back? Okay.
I would have to say it like this, just to keep the suspense. Got to wait and see. Stay tuned.
So you're going to
No, of course, I will come back. Well, I will come back for the next 20 years.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. We do appreciate that. What I would like you to do maybe to close, because we did talk a lot about history, and we did learn a lot from previous. Let's take a minute to close and tell me what you see in this city in a year.
Yeah.
From now, that's palpable, that can actually, where you, now that you're in there, you've seen what you can do as a mayor, you've seen what some of the limitations that you talked about, but what are we going to see that's different a year from now when we do, well, hopefully we'll have you back in a couple months, but a year from now, what are we going to see?
Yeah.
How's this city better yet?
Yeah. Well, first of all, let me just thank you, Dan, for providing space and allow me to be comfortable and to be vulnerable. It's like these people weren't even here. It was just you and I up here talking.
I do apologize for the time. Yeah. I didn't even look at my watch.
No,
but
it's okay.
It has been engaging. Thank you.
It's good to be on a stage where someone is taking the heat. I'm glad they're mad at you and not me. That's the first time in my career as mayor where I'm actually on stage with someone and I'm not the one that they're mad about. But we got to keep you around, Dan. So thank you. And thank you to all of you in this room for your ingenuity and your work. So much that we can be proud of. You know, didn't we do a wonderful job with the DNC? Wasn't that just fabulous? Come on, give yourselves a hand for that. It was awesome.
Full city effort,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it was a full city effort.
Including City Club, yeah.
Yeah, no, yes. You all did an amazing job. And the city of Chicago, you know, look, man, we really shined. Is this a proud moment? Oh, we made history, even though the election didn't go the way that I wanted to go, and had a chance to travel five different states, battleground states, and speak on behalf of Vice President Harris and I wish her all the best in her future. I think for the people of Chicago, you know, what we should look for is that there are four areas that I believe that you all should judge me on. How are the children? It's a question that in my ancestral roots, that's the question we always ask. How are the children? I think that's an area that I believe that we will continue to get stronger on, and grateful Chicagoland Chamber of Commerce. Thank you, Jack, for being here and the commitment to the business community to help us hire young people. Like, it's a real collaborative effort there. I think the other thing that will be different about 2025 is, you know, a real commitment to responding to homelessness in this city. I mean, you know, there's a lot of developers in here. I'm very proud of the work that many folks have done. LZ Higginbottoms has been building and building and building. It's finally good to be in a room where I can shout his name out. I know I'm important now because LZ is in the room with me. But there are other developers that recognize their assignment, and so many other people, you know. Thank you, Robert, for his just innovation around technology and finding more efficiencies in government and his great ideas. But building more, that will be improved. That'll be better. I think the third thing, too, is, you know, this national platform that we have. You know, I get a chance to go all over the country and all over the world. And the last time I was in New York with the Clinton Global Initiative, there were mayors from all over the country who were just appreciative of our stance and our response to the migrant mission. You know, the city of Bogota, you know, we're talking about 1 million Venezuelans over time have migrated into Bogota, right? The instability of governments all over the country, all over the world, rather, is quite severe. And so responding to our young people, responding to building more homes, being available to make sure that we're supporting individuals who are struggling with mental and behavioral health. And I believe that's going to be better. And finally, look, I'm counting on all of us in this room to ensure that our neighborhoods are safer. I by the time we're in this moment, this time next year, the evidence has to be not just in the data, but the evidence has to be connected to the overall strategy of what all of us have done. Listen, if it only took one person to solve these issues, I believe that these issues would have been rectified. But the reason why I believe that the city of Chicago is not quite moving with smooth, efficient formation is because there are just too many disagreements that still exist. And all I'm simply saying to you all and to the people of Chicago, we've tried it a different way already. It didn't work, you all. And you know how I know? Because I'm here. If the other way worked, the city of Chicago would not have elected me. Trust the people of this city. Let's work together. Let's do it another way. And let's make sure that Braden can vote for me in 2031. Thank you all very much.
He's making an announcement here, right here at City Club. Thank you, Mayor Brandon Johnson. It's great to have you. You're welcome back anytime, sir.